The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello. Welcome, everyone, again to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I am your host, John Schmidt. And again, today, as every week, I'll be taking us out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures, those that I like to say that are rich with the essence of constant renewal. Well, it is great to again be back live on Zoomed again after a little time off, and it is rather wonderful for sure that the world did not end over the weekend on May 21st at 6 p.m., as prophesied by Harold Camping and his end time crusade. I guess, needless to say, we wouldn't be here if that were the case. But nonetheless, even without that prophecy, the era of extraordinary change beats on. Breakdowns, surprises, and breakthroughs continue to come together in a soup pot dynamic of disruptions and shocks, the likes of which we have been talking about for a couple of years now here on Zoomed. But today we are going to focus on our instincts, our responses to fear, among other things, amidst this dynamic of change, and specifically to focus on the breakthrough arena of new perspective regarding instinctual intelligence that I think is essential for our individual and collective pathways going forward. But let me get started today briefly as I introduce this and contextualize the conversation, especially for some that aren't always listening week to week or to new listeners, in light of the era of extraordinary change, and really highlight and just even point to what we're all aware of, the events that we're experiencing and the instincts underpinning them that we basically experience and others are experiencing. Over the weekend, let me just refresh. If we take a look at the breakdown front and we consider the economic agenda, which is part of what we often talk about here on Zoomed, we saw further downgrades on the financial condition of countries under the heavy debt microscope. Friday, Fitch became the second major rating agency to warn about Greece that any kind of debt restructuring would be considered a sovereign default. Of course, that's exactly the kind of outcome the Eurozone governments try to avoid. We've mentioned that before. And then on Saturday, Italy's ratings outlook was lowered to negative from stable, citing the company's poor growth prospects and concerns about the government's ability to reduce public borrowing. Not a far picture from us, perhaps, here in the U.S. in some of our years to come. But the impact, and I think we've seen it today, the global Dow is down pretty big. It's fallen hard. The markets here in the U.S. selling off in response to risk and fear. And many people, I suspect, across the world and here in the U.S. have some pangs of fear in the pit of their stomachs that come up when we start to see the market sort of fall in this way. Life savings, threat to long-term financial health seems to be always in the balance, or at least when we see these times of greater concerns, they continue to be on the rise. We can actually even sense them. And what's your response today? That's my question to you as we get started. And then second and third, just a couple of perspectives on the environmental or the surprise front. If we really even pay attention to the news this morning, we saw it over the weekend as well. Tornadoes here in the U.S., in the Midwest, and a big one that spun through Joplin, Missouri, killed at least 89 that we've accounted so far. Big swath of wreckage, 6 miles long, half mile wide, very reminiscent of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and the fury of not too many days ago. And again, you can feel the gripping quality in the pit of your stomach as you see these scenes, as you sense the reality of the disaster scene being experienced, it's all gone, is what many of them are actually saying. That's a recognition we saw in Tuscaloosa. Many here are seeing that as well, as in what they're finding as they really take a look at their town post-storm. And then there's the Mississippi River flooding. It's continuing to swallow up towns amidst historic floods sweeping from the north to the south. Again, more losses, more devastation, more lives and people, just as I described last week on the show about chaotic nodes. They find themselves at that juncture point where an old reality has rather shockingly passed away, and a new reality perhaps has not yet been formed. So my point with all of this, as we get started, and for new listeners as well, today is once again to portray that there's an intersection of the outer realm of our experiences in life. They flourish in the world, and specifically in relation to our inner realm. And today, to the instinctual responses that we might be sensing, to those, and pointing to those kind of in-the-belly fear responses and reactions that we all know and recognize and part of our human condition that come out in this era of extraordinary change. Today, we're specifically and precisely pointing our attention to these instincts, and as I said, to instinctual intelligence, and I think this is an arena of breakthrough that can serve us all and support us as we live into a very dynamic future, the one that I often call VUCA, volatile, uncertain, complex, and chaotic, and ambiguous, and it's ripe for all of this experience and the intelligence needed to deal with the world we're living into. For a long time now, folks, human instincts have been regarded as the cause of many of the world's most difficult problems. Violence, poverty, political oppression, even breakdowns of the family. We haven't talked about as much of that here, but all of these are what is seen often as an ungovernable instinctual set of responses. And while they've been regarded as a cause and an underpinning, little really has been known or understood about them, about the realities that surround them, or the potential that they offer until most recently, or really until now. And today our guest, in my view, is at the forefront of this breakthrough of arena of intelligence, offering a synthesis of the latest on neurobiology and sciences at large, psychology and the wisdom traditions that offer what as a whole has never before in my mind been recognized and put into a tangible form of understanding and practice. My guest today is Ted Usatinsky, founder and director of Instinctual Intelligence, author of Instinctual Intelligence, The Primal Wisdom of the Nervous System and the Evolution of Human Nature. And I got to tell you, this book is a must-read, a must-read. I don't just recommend all these books, but this is a must-read. No one until Ted has presented a systematic account of how our instincts work, much less how they can be harnessed and developed to enhance our everyday lives. By way of introduction, Ted's been a student of biophysical anthropology, evolution, human development, and Tibetan Buddhist tantric meditation practices. He holds masters from Harvard and Naropa. Quite a marvelous combination, I would say. He is a longtime student of the Ridwan Diamond Approach. Ted, welcome. Thank you for joining us on Zoomed.
John, thank you for having me, and thank you for the wonderful introduction.
Well, it's well-deserved, Ted. I think this is a breakthrough arena, and maybe you can get us off here started. I started pointing arm's length to some of our experiences and what's out there, but we all have these instincts. Maybe you can kick us off with a little sense about what they are, how they're activated, kind of the world we're living into.
I think that's a great place to start, John. Sometimes we use the terms instincts, and we don't really understand what they point to, what they mean, or they're kind of all lumped together. So let's just take a minute to break them apart and see that actually within the human nervous system, as a result of evolution, we have several very specific systems that operate consciously and often unconsciously and direct us in certain ways. Our behaviors, our thoughts, our emotions are patterned and structured by these instinctual systems that are deeply embedded in our nervous systems. And we could start, most people are familiar with, say, aggression, the aggressive impulse. And we can look at that closely as like a survival instinct, a self-protective instinct that often can operate for others that we love or in the context of our family. But there are many more than that. We could look at the instincts for connecting with others, for tribal affiliation, bonding with children, with infants, with each other, our friends, our lovers. There's a deep, rich, instinctual system and many multiple subsystems that underlie those behaviors and our feelings towards others. We also have a set of instincts that I would term persevering instincts that enable us to conduct behaviors in the world that require ongoing effort, that isn't just a one-time act of self-defense, but simply going up and getting up and going to work every day would be one of those. We all are familiar with sexual instincts, our desire to approach others that we find attractive. We evaluate them, see what kind of characteristics they have sexually that are based most likely on reproductive characteristics that were relevant many thousands of years ago, even millions of years ago. And we also have extreme survival responses, things we do in the most difficult of circumstances. For example, a freezing response where we're being potentially attacked by a very large predator and we lie still and quiet. That's another evolved response we have to some of the dangers in the environment. And I could go on, but I think it's just useful to point out the breadth and the complexity of our instinctual systems and the precise ways that they can help us cope with the world, adapt to the world, and explore the world. And it really is an important place to start rather than lumping them all together.
I think that's great to tease them out, Ted. And as I was actually even using some of the examples early on, was trying to do that to show some of the breadth of what might actually be the experiences happening in the world and the responses to them. What's your sense of this era we're living into and the qualities of it and the relationship to the instincts that are activated? Any thoughts about that?
Well, John, I think we're in a unique situation in this day and age. I think the combination of global media, 24-hour web access and so on, that we're inundated with a lot of information about what's going on in the world. And because of that, I think it accelerates the pace of change, both socially, culturally, and even perhaps environmentally in some ways. And we're more aware of what's going on in the environment, certainly. And these changes, they can often seem overwhelming. Wasn't too long ago that we had the financial crisis where people were glued to their TV sets, the evening news, what's happening in the world? Why are the markets crashing? Why are home prices plunging? Bankruptcies, foreclosures, things of that nature. And as you mentioned, the physical and changes in the physical environment are really troubling. There's seems to be an increasing rate of natural disasters, fears of earthquakes, and so on. The point is that these news and environmental events are triggering deep survival responses in a lot of us and all across the world. And as those get triggered, we pay attention to them more. There's more focus on them. We talk about them more. We consider their meaning and significance more.
That I hear, that's a great kickoff and a jump point, I think. I hear the music in my ear here and the backdrop here. I think that we got a short break here that we can pick up on, but I'd like to really delve more into this in terms of these survival triggers, because what you've pointed out is there's the side of this where there may be a negative side that can be uncontrollable, but there's a positive side in the developmental perspective about this. That's where I think we can get to as we build this conversation. But let's take a short break, Ted. Come back in just a moment, folks. We are on Monday. We are really taking a look at instinctual intelligence underpinning the era we're living into. Take a short break. Come right back. Thanks.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. The Zoomed Leadership Conversation today, as well as shows both past and upcoming, are intended to illuminate perspectives on the great transition in motion, the extraordinary era of change that is affecting all of our personal lives, our organizations, our communities, and our governing institutions. Big shifts are happening, and more are coming. Some can be foreseen, but many are outside current paradigms of thought. All, however, ultimately will be shaped by new and expanding forms of leadership, capable of holding the widest possible views and the deepest forms of interconnection. Join Zoomed host John Schmidt weekly as he rides the rising wave of intelligence, moving us all toward a world of immense potential, dynamism, and economic, social, and environmental renewal. Zoomed is sponsored in part by Avastone Consulting, a source point for development of leadership and organizational resilience and sustainability for the last 25 years. Find John and his colleagues at Avastone via avastoneconsulting.com.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Class is in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, we're back today with Ted Usatinsky. We are talking about instinctual intelligence, and I have to say, folks, I've held this show back for some time. It's been something that I wanted to do for the last couple of years. I really was waiting to have Ted on till we got to the point that I thought was a juncture of incredible prominence and the power of how instinctual intelligence could yield even more underpinning to our future. I think now is the time for that. Ted, let's continue the conversation, though, because you were starting to really talk more about the stress responses, about the state of flux. Maybe you can say a little bit more to start to build kind of the perspective of this as an underpinning of where we experience in light of these big events and shocks.
Sure, John. Really, looking at what's going on in the world today, we can't help but be aware of it, whether we get our news through the internet or TV or through friends. We're inundated these days with the profound social and environmental changes that are going on, not just in our country, but this is happening all over the world. And we all notice it, and we're all impacted by it one way or another. So our primal responses to this kind of uncertainty in the environment, you could say we have two basic types of responses. One is we're afraid of it. It builds us up to a point where we want to either get away from it, the flight response, or fight against it, to do something about it, to actively protect ourselves. And this fight or flight response has been around. Animals have it. I mean, it runs through the nervous system of all living things on this planet. Even the most primitive have some kind of response that takes them away from danger. The other response we might have is just to find it simply overwhelming, and we kind of shut down and go into a freeze response. We don't want to hear any more news. We don't want to deal with any more problems. We just want to get in our beds where it's safe and warm and hope that it all goes away.
Yeah.
We've all had that feeling.
Absolutely.
So, go ahead.
About the response then. I mean, when we can be one place or another, we all have individual responses to this. This is not kind of an arm's length thing. I mean, that's why I tried to really initiate this. Within this, though, how do we understand this more about what's going on and how we're able to work with it, Ted?
Well, you have to remember, a lot of these responses have developed over millions of years. And in the specific case of human beings, at least hundreds of thousands of years. So their capacity to express themselves in, say, like you said, the stress response or the fight or flight response often can be very intense. We'll feel a surge of fear and then a surge of adrenaline. We'll want to do something about it. We'll want to take some kind of action. And a lot of times it's not very well thought out. It's just a response that we have based on animals chasing us or someone acting maybe violent towards a mate or a spouse or our children. So there's this protective energy to take quick action that in some cases, if you're a business person, if you're a financial trader, say, in these markets and so on, often the better case might be to take a breath, sit back, and evaluate a little more deeply. But a lot of times we feel we need to take some kind of rash action to protect ourselves. And again, the other hand, we can feel this is too much, I can't deal with it. We kind of close ourselves off. We shut off the TV, we shut off our computer screen. We, in the business world, a lot of times leaders will just want to shut the door, retreat into their office and say, hey, I need to take a break, but they do more than take a break. They really want to dissociate from what's going on. They want to think about something else. And that's where we can really kind of lose our natural intelligence by being overwhelmed by these instinctual responses.
So that's what you're describing to me is putting a distance between what's natural within us and the possibility of the intelligence there, putting something between us in a reactive kind of way, a rash and action, sort of a real reaction kind of a response that gets us away from what the clear thinking might bring in terms of the best and might even disconnect us, as we often talk about here on Zoom, from the nature of the presence of who we are ourselves. It's a disconnection, is it not?
That's exactly it, John. Either way, if we're too amped up, too hyper, too aggro, as we say out here in California, too aggressive, or too shut down, too frozen, too inhibited, either way, we're not taking intelligent action, intelligent thinking, and even feeling open, being in connection with others. We're just shut down in one way or another, too aggressive or too soft, too frozen.
And so part of, I got to imagine, part of this is to be aware of what's happening within us. I'm sure we can talk more about that, but I've got to imagine there is an awareness and sensing when we're beginning to get into that kind of a reactive state that's coming out of these instinctual drives.
That's exactly it, John, is the awareness of it. Because as soon as we can catch that, saying, hey, I'm getting overwhelmed here, I'm getting flooded with all these intense emotions, or, hey, I'm really withdrawing, I'm just wanting to go away, I'm feeling cold, I'm feeling isolated. As soon as we begin to recognize it, we can begin to regulate ourselves, to bring intelligence to it. Through that self-awareness, we begin to develop the capacity to modulate our instinctual responses, and that's really the key, is letting them function in a way that they were designed to with their full intelligence and not letting this overwhelm us just on pure aggression or a pure withdrawal.
But it seems to me this is a tough place because the reaction and the action alleviates part of what we're experiencing there. So, for example, if you're in a, you mentioned the financial trading, if you're in a trade that's going south and you're losing, and I've had some experiences of that within the last year,
you
get out of the market and all of a sudden, okay, you've lost something, but that fear goes away. I mean, your loss is there, but it goes away. So it seems to me that's a delicate point here as well.
It is. It's a skill that needs to be developed. It's not a simple rule of like, oh, I'm feeling fear, I'm going to stop feeling fear now. It's a skill that we need to practice, hone, develop, and I'd be lying to you if I said, oh, it's just two easy steps. You know, you just do this, and then you just do that, and all of a sudden, you know, you're calm and smooth like Barack Obama, calm in the face of needing to assert himself with a, you know, aggressive energy towards Osama bin Laden, and also kind, recognizing the heartfelt impact this had on the victims of the families of 9/11, just to use one example. How do leaders in different fields respond both to be assertive and kind and gentle and compassionate? It's a difficult art to develop.
Well, it is. Maybe let's tune into that, because as I'm understanding Obama, he got a lot of different and mixed advice on this situation that could have been fueling all kinds of different responses. I'm wondering, did you listen to any? I think there was a 60-minute interview. There was some other stuff. You probably are aware of some of that. What about Obama? Is that a case to even think about?
I think it is. I think it's a great example. And this isn't a comment on his politics or his policies, or even his decision to go after Osama and the results of that. I think it is for leaders to look at what was involved in his decision-making process. And now, from what I understand, he went through a period of months and months where he was meeting in top secrecy with members of the intelligence agency, the Defense Department, and so on. Now, at one point, he described as having as many 20 people in the room, all giving him different opinions. Now, you got to remember, these guys aren't, junior-level executives. They're heads of the armed forces. They're head of the CIA. These are powerful people with very strong and well-considered opinions. Now, his job is to sit there in a room with 20 of the smartest people in the world and consider each one of their opinions, their concerns, what they're seeing, what the consequences following things through logically. Hey, what if this goes wrong? Then what could happen? What would happen politically, economically, militarily? That's a huge matrix of considerations that he has to put himself in the middle of and arrive at an intelligent, clear path of action. So for him, the challenge is, how does he maintain the instinctual, primacy of what is an aggressive approach? I want to, as they say, eliminate the threat of Osama bin Laden. And he needs to stay focused on that goal. At the same time, he needs to consider a wealth of other opinions, an incredible matrix of how to go about that. What's the best way? What are the doubts? What could go wrong? How could this backfire, even something worse than what happened in 1979? So as a leader, as an executive, to stay open to all those opinions and think objectively, not just what we want to hear, not just what satisfies our aggressive impulse or would soothe our fearful side, our withdrawal side, the freezing side, like, oh, this is too much, I don't want to risk it. How do you walk that tightrope of staying with your instincts, what needs to be done, the primal drives, while staying open, responsive, adaptive to reality, to changes in the plan as it unfolds? I think there's something we can all learn from that example of what he went through, how he approached it, how he took in information, and at the same time never lost sight of what he had to do, his basic motivation.
Ted, I think that's a great example. I can hear the music in my ears and the backdrop here. It's time for a short break, but let's pick up on this. I think this is really a wonderful case in point about the context of a complex situation loaded with instinctual responses of fear, political responses in this case, economic responses depending upon how it's actually perceived in the world. All kinds of things come out of that, but I'd like to pick up on that question when we come back in a little bit more and point into this. So how is it that we take in information in light of this and acknowledge what might be going on? I'd like to continue when we come back on that, Ted, but let's take a short break. Come on back, folks. Instinctual intelligence, our focus today, continues in a moment. Thanks.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Exhumed Leadership is sponsored in part by Cosmos Journal, the journal for world citizens creating the new civilization. More than just a publication, Cosmos is committed to informing, inspiring, and engaging the world in the transition to an emerging, sustainable, just, and compassionate global culture and civilization that works for all. For over 10 years, Cosmos has been a leading voice that tracks the deep systemic transformations already occurring at the margins of society as our institutions prove unable to serve the needs of the times. Published twice a year in print and digital, Cosmos includes leading-edge articles from social change leaders on the global commons, people power, global governance, new economics, collective intelligence, and cultivating the self. The impact of these paradigm-changing ideas is enhanced through stunning visuals and photographic stories that motivate to action. Start exploring Cosmos Journal and continue opening your perspectives about leadership and the emerging great transition at cosmosjournal.org. Join the Cosmos Leaders of Change and make a difference today. These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back on Zoom, Ted Usatinsky is with us today. We are framing this as we have been with the era of extraordinary change, what we are likely to face personally and collectively in this era of dynamic and ongoing change, the kinds of shifts, the shocks, all of what comes together in the soup pot that I mentioned. And I think, Ted, you've done a great job of putting this in the context of our president here, Obama, and what he might have actually been experiencing. And I'd like to translate that down from there into practical implications. But first, though, before we do, I've got to imagine that that Barack Obama, he wasn't just born kind of this way, came out of the box in a way where it was all comfortable with him to deal in the intersection of these survival instincts and the complex issues. What's your sense? Has he grown and developed in his own capacities in this realm?
I think that's a really important thing to point out, John. If you look at all great leaders, none of them just suddenly arise somewhere in their 40s or 50s, male and female, with these great skills. It's something we have to learn and develop. Obama went through several challenges, you know, growing up in without a father of mixed races and so on. And then by the time he got to law school at Harvard, he was still in the minority as an African American student there, and rose to become head of the law review and so on. So, and then growing up or continuing to work in Chicago in the tough neighborhoods there, he went through a process where he really had to call on his capacity to be open to people, and that was kind of his work with community development and so on, is to subdue for a time his own impulses of fear and greed and so on, and listen to others, take in things, and slowly develop consensus among groups of people, while still asserting his own capacity as a leader. So that's it's something that we just need to reflect on, and I'm sure many of your listeners have very similar resumes of how they rose up through challenging situations, developed themselves, put themselves in a position of leadership, and now still want to develop further. So it seems it's not just something that we reach a point of where, hey, I'm good at doing this, and I'm good with people, and so on, and I'm good at staying calm. But who knows how far and how we might be tested in some ways in the coming years, what capacities we need to navigate these changing times.
But Ted, I think what's important here, and as someone who's been involved in executive and leadership development for many, many years, I don't think there's the emphasis until now and what you're bringing to the fore here about the instinctual understanding and the instinctual intelligence which is resonant within us that can be developed. This is not a realm, this is not an area where most of your traditional realms have really been delving into. And I'm wondering if you can kind of bring this back down from President Barack Obama to us in terms of the practical side of this about, so what do we actually do? What do our listeners actually do to understand this more fully and their own instincts, and how do they deal with them as they get responses and they're gripped by the latest fear that comes across their path?
Mm-hmm. I think the first thing to recognize is that you're not starting from square one. All of us, by the time we reach adulthood, have some natural capacities to survive, to thrive in the world. We wouldn't have made it this far if we didn't. So first thing, as always, I tell people, give yourselves on a pat, you pat on your back. You made it this far. You've done well. You've got something working. You've got millions of years of evolution behind you. So there's a good chance you can go even further. But in terms of practical skills that we need to develop, and I know a lot of leadership courses that I've been to in the past and so on will simply tell you, well, in this situation you need to be calm, or here you should be more charismatic and outgoing, as if these were just things that, you know, suddenly I could do out of nowhere, you know, calm down when I'm feeling like I'm having a heart attack about some situation that I'm anxious. Isn't that easy if you're not trained and don't have the skills? So in a very basic sense, you could say that we're learning to develop our capacity to regulate the instincts, meaning how to find a place where they can function optimally. And again, we're always working with the two obstacles that would prevent that. One is becoming overcharged, being dominated by the instincts, just acting out of pure rage or frustration. And that can happen, you know, in our office, a coworker or a subordinate will bring something to us, and it's not satisfactory, and you just got off the phone with a difficult client and so on, you want to snap at them, like, oh, there's an aggressive response, and often that's not what's really needed or most effective. And on the other hand, we're also wary of shutting our instincts down, being too timid, not being bold enough, listening to that voice of self-doubt, of self-judgment, that's, oh, you shouldn't have done that, or oh, you shouldn't act that way, or who do you think you are to be so big and bold? So that's really what we're working with, and a lot of the clients that I work with, is that we're trying to recognize where do we get overcharged and where are we inhibited or undercharged. That's the primary place we want to focus on, those two extremes.
But it's starting with a sense of awareness. So you're using the word recognition, but it's really being clear of awareness and perhaps inquiring into our own experience about where we end on that continuum. Is that right?
That's really a good point, John, and it focuses in on being present with your own body. That's the first place we can tell and instantly tell what's going on with us. So, for the example, when we're overcharged, when we're really fired up and fed up and just basically pissed off, we'll notice we feel warm, we feel hot, we feel a redness in our neck, we'll feel a clenching in our stomach, and we'll maybe a gritting of our teeth. Contraction in our foreheads. And as soon as we recognize those things are going on, you can just simply say to yourself, hey, I'm getting overwhelmed. I'm having a stress response right now. And boy, just the power of saying that to yourself and recognizing it immediately starts to diffuse it. You're aware. You're not just acting through it. You're just bringing awareness to it. You're saying, hey, I got to take a minute here to calm down. I'm overcharged.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best ways to do that when you're overcharged is simply to breathe into your belly. In your belly, there are a lot. The lower lungs have a lot of what are called parasympathetic receptor sites, which are the on the autonomic nervous system. They're the calming side of it. The nervous system operates with both calming and arousing aspects to it. The parasympathetic side is, elicits a calming response instantly. Endorphins will start to flow. Our whole mood will calm down simply by taking maybe 5 or 10 deep breaths into our belly. and it will start to restore our cognition and our awareness of the environment in a way, oh, I see what's going on here. I'm getting worked up. I'm going to take a few breaths. Let me settle down. Why don't you just tell me what you just said again? Now I can listen a little better.
So what you're doing, the breathing in that case, is providing a sense of clarity, that you're getting more clear, it's more distinct, your capacity to bring some of the rational thought, the clear sort of vibrance and sort of brilliance of your thinking, try to restore that as opposed to get lost in the instinctual realm. Is that what you're really describing there, Tim?
That's exactly it, John. It's calming this, what is called the sympathetic response, the flight or fight response. If we can just take that down a notch or two, not suppress it, not deny it, say, oh, I'm never going to get angry again, or I'm bad for feeling this way, but just take a couple deep breaths and say, hey, I feel this surge of energy. It's telling me something I need to pay attention to, something I might even need to take action on. But let me take a few breaths into my belly and absorb that energy, get to know it, get familiar with it, see what it wants to do, rather than just acting on the very first impulse that comes up. Now, we're not talking about a life or death situation where your child is in front of a car coming down the road. That's different. That does require immediate action. But I'm talking about the majority of our interactions in the day-to-day world, especially at work, especially in the business setting, especially when people are charged up, bringing you complex emotions if you're in the place of a leader. How do you respond with intelligence and grace rather than just reacting out of frustration or rage?
And is there a way, are there sort of likewise other techniques you would use if you're not in that aggressive mode, but if you're pulling away?
That's exactly what we want to focus on the other side, is sometimes we feel inhibited, we feel uncertain to ourselves. And one of the big culprits of that is the voice of self-doubt and self-judgment. And I tell you, John, I do workshops all over, and I hear this day in, day out. All of us have this voice, little voice inside our heads that tells us, oh, you shouldn't do this, oh, be careful, constantly evaluating our behaviors and passing judgment on it. And when that happens, when we talk to ourselves that way and we buy into it, it shuts down our nervous system. It shuts down our capacity. It shuts down our instinctual capacities to act decisively and quickly and intelligently. And it's one of the biggest challenges most people face in this day and age. I'd say probably 80% of the people I work with are more lean toward the side of inhibition and self-doubt. And so what we recommend for them, this is a simple starting point, is, again, starts with the body. I'm feeling contracted. I'm feeling shut down. I'm feeling depressed. I just had a sudden loss of energy. I just, all of a sudden, what happened? I'm deflated. As soon as you recognize that, take some breaths into your upper chest, not your lower belly, but your upper chest. That's where the most of the sympathetic, the fight or flight response fibers are in our lungs. By taking a few breaths that way, strong, full breaths into the upper chest, into the neck, it's going to give us a boost in our nervous system and bring our cognition back online. We're going to be able to look around and say, okay, I'm still present, I'm still here, I don't have to run away from this. I can stay present to what's going on here.
Ted, I love it. I love the practicality of that. I love the practicality for each of us that's listening to this in the context of what we're experiencing. I hear the music in our ears here. Let's take a short break, Ted. I want to come back. I want to optimize what we have in our last segment here, continue to pick up on this and how we go about what we do. How do we develop and even bring forward more of the capacity we have to use and draw in these instinctual drives? How do we do that? Ted, let's come back in just a moment after a break. And also, folks, I want to keep you pointed in terms of where we're going. I think this conversation may have multiple steps to it, but more to come on that. Let's take a break, folks. Back in a moment for the conclusion. Thanks.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
Thank you. tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
How can we Americans realize our dreams to earn a living? How can you pursue your dream and make money as an owner or an employee? Learn how at The American Business Person, the online weekly radio talk show hosted by Rich Killian. Today's business leaders share how to succeed and what fails. If you own a new or established business or ever hope to, you must tune in. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central, and noon Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel or listen on demand to our archived shows.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back on Zoom today, instinctual intelligence, our focus. We've been hitting a range of things from fear and our survival response, rational thinking, the reality testing, how we're able to build the context of good perspectives and information, using our gut intentions. And Ted, we were leaving the last one about the nature of self-doubt and how the voice of judgment, which all of us, I can't tell you anybody in this audience, I got to imagine, has that sense at some point, somewhere along the way, about that self-doubt and that self-judgment. That seems to be a huge, huge element in and of itself.
It really is, John, and I'm sure even Barack Obama lies awake at night sometimes doubting himself
sure
and what he's done. It's, no one can escape from it. It's a really important facet of human nature to recognize and begin to deal with. And, you know, in our modern programs of development for executives, training for psychotherapists, across the board, I haven't seen it dealt with that much. And it really is something that bringing it out in the open, being honest about it with our friends and our colleagues, could really help take away some of its sting and its tendency to close our minds down. All of us have been in conversations where someone said something to us, and we think this, it has some implication for us, and we feel all of a sudden like, oh, my God, what does that mean about me? Or he doesn't like me, or she doesn't think this is good. Or we have, and it closes us down. It freezes our perception. We start thinking about ourselves, we'll notice a person will be talking to us, we'll see their mouth moving, and we won't even be hearing what they're saying because we're running through our own mind, our own consequences to ourselves, and feeling some kind of shame or diminishment about it.
Well, that the diminishment, I mean, it seems to me that's the part of the point. The voice of judgment comes in and says, okay, so let's say you've acted aggressively in some case, and the voice of judgment comes in and says, oh, you jerk, you just acted aggressively, you did something really bad there, and then you shrink up into something that's far less than the capacity that you have. That's the kind of realm you're talking about here, are you not?
That's exactly what it is, Jeff. That's exactly how it operates. We shrink down, and we got to remember, our instinctual intelligence is based on programs that the nervous system has developed over millions of years of evolution. There's a lot of energy behind it and a lot of intelligence behind it. It knows what to do. It knows how to act appropriately. And when we start interfering with it, judging it, condemning it, shutting it down, it doesn't have any chance to operate it, to operate with its natural intelligence, its natural boldness, its natural passion. It's subdued, diminished, and in many cases just completely we're cut off from it if we continue to operate that way and believe these self-judgments we have in our everyday life.
And a lot of this, Ted, is self-conscious or subconscious. It's not, you know, we'll feel this contraction, but we won't really link that to anything. You know, we won't really necessarily link to this to some survival response and an instinctual reaction. We'll just sort of take this as ourselves, and it's sort of part of the water we swim in, as opposed to a recognition that you've been describing that we need to be aware of.
That's exactly right, John. And also, you know, it'll happen in an instant. It'll be a little voice that just says, ah, see, you were stupid for acting that way. Or it won't even be that quick. It's like, ah, you're stupid. And that's it. And that's all we hear. And then, you know, and we won't even notice it. We just feel the shrinkage, the diminishment, the loss of energy, the inhibition, and we kind of want to just go make our face self feel better and get on Facebook or entertain ourselves or distract ourselves in some way. But we've shrunk from an opportunity to be more assertive, more bold, more passionate about something, or even make a connection with someone, to bond with someone. And we have this self-doubt, oh, I don't know if they're really going to like me. I'm not going to say anything. And we lose the chance to make a friend or make a business connection or even a potential mate that we're interested in. Sometimes we don't say something, we don't make the move, we don't open ourselves up because we have this self-doubt and self-judgment.
And let me point to it, Ted, we've talked about this. You've actually got a new book coming in this realm, and we've talked about actually devoting a show to this as well, to an upcoming show, perhaps a part two of this, to bring alive the notion of this instinctual intelligence and how it's dampened by the voice of judgment. But it is a book coming. I know we've only got a couple of minutes here left on the show here today, but it is in process, ought to be coming out soon. But this is an area you've been working on a lot, has it not?
It is. We've put a lot of research into it, and there's a lot of research about the neurobiology of what's called the shame response, how our nervous system can, in childhood, be diminished by our parents in some ways, which is a natural thing. Sometimes three-year-olds need to be brought under control, but we carry this residue of shame with us into adulthood. So we're really doing a lot of research on how this develops neurologically and how can we, as adults, recognize that we've learned certain ways of inhibiting ourselves, and how can we change that process to bring out our natural instinctive programs that really want to help us survive and thrive in the world. And in this day and age, we can't afford to be any less than we are. We can't afford to pretend that we're still children or buy into these voices of self-doubt, because as leaders, as business people, as parents, in today's world, with the challenges that we face, now is the time for assertive yet intelligent leadership and action.
And as you were describing with President Obama, it's a matter of being able to take in the full breadth and depth of information to elicit the most wise choices and to really initiate an action that wouldn't be as powerfully focused and intended if it's obscured by our survival instincts, which are dampening it.
Right, and this way we combine the natural intelligence of our energy, our impulses to act and act intelligently, with being able to respond to what's happening in the environment. Because we might have an intelligent impulse that takes us to step one, but as you know, in this ever-changing world, conditions change very quickly, and so we need to be able to be flexible, to change our behavior, to change our pattern of thinking. Okay, that was step one, but now step two calls for something else. So we need that flexibility. We need to be able to take in input from the environment and change what we're doing, change our way of thinking, change the way we feel, change the way we act in response to how the environment is changing. And we can't do that unless we're clear, unless we're open, and especially if we're not sitting around judging ourselves and second-guessing ourselves with all sorts of doubt and fear. And,
you know, Ted, what I really like about what your work is revealing here is there's an underpinning power in the instincts that are really accessible to us and useful and actually needed in this era of change. They become dampened in some ways, but underneath them is a certain degree of power and essential qualities that fuels the kinds of change we're talking about. That, to me, is a paradigm shift from where most of the discussion about instincts has been.
Yeah, absolutely. They're either condemned as being too much, that they're the root of the problems, and I'm arguing exactly, no, that's actually the solution to the problem. We just need to help them evolve so they can function in the modern world more clearly and more efficiently.
And I think that's really a beautiful way. Let me point to, before we get too far along here, Ted, so people who are interested in the book, it is Instinctual Intelligence, Primal Wisdom of the Nervous System and Evolution of Human Nature. They can get it on Amazon.
On
your website as well, instinctualintelligence.org. And I suspect they sent a message to you. You'll be able to autograph it for them, give them some personal reference and that kind of thing. But there is a wealth of perspective to take this. We're going to continue the shows on it. But again, this book, to me, Ted, is a rich, this is a must read for all of us to understand the nature of what's really going on.
Okay, John. Well, thank you so much for having me on.
Ted, I love it. I hear the music in the backdrop here. I think I'd love to continue to talk with you. I invite listener comments about areas of the show you'd love to hear more. Love some questions. Love to be able to come in and tune in into more. Perhaps next time we can even give some give and take, get some listeners calling in live, really talk about this even more directly, Ted. But great first step. Love to have you on. Thank you so much. This, to me, has been an important piece of the conversation. I'm glad we waited until now, and let's continue to flourish, Ted. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, John.
All right, folks. Here we are on Zoom. The conversation, the era of extraordinary change, continues. We are continuing to look at this intersection of the outer world, our inner lives. It is not two, it is one. It is a reflection, and perhaps as we go on, we'll even talk more about the inner realm as even being more primary, more central, the gaze being much more internal than external. That's our conversation. And the realities of the world on Zoom. How do we build our leadership into the world, into the future, into the dynamics of life that we would really love to see? Have a great week, folks. As always here on Zoomed, like I always like to say, enjoy most of all. So long. See you later. Bye.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.